House come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
Welcome to a fresh helping of Capital Ideas. You probably know already that this is the only podcast where members of the Majority Democratic Caucus in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. We don't talk a lot about politics here. You can find that on an infinite number of other podcasts, TV channels, and radio stations. What comes up most often here will be ideas about solving problems, about making Washington a safer, greener, more prosperous, and more equitable place for 8 million or so people to live, work, recreate, go to school, raise families, retire, all that and more. Today's ideas are courtesy of Representative Lisa Parshley. Lisa is new to the legislature, working for her friends and neighbors in the 22nd District, which is where we're sitting right now in the Capitol building. She's got a story to tell and some bills to talk about, and you'll meet her in just a second. We recorded this Thursday, March 13th, 2025, and it went like this. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Representative Lisa Parshley of the 22nd Legislative District here in Olympia, Washington.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
This is your first session, therefore it's your first Capital Ideas. Can I get you to give a kind of a quick bio, the kind of thing you would do in an elevator that was going about 30 stories?
Oh, an elevator speech. I've heard of those. Yes, I can give you my quick bio. I am actually a trained scientist as well as a veterinarian. And in weird way, that led me to the politics. I realized and was trained that if you care about something, you have to work for it. And that led me into professional association work for the veterinary profession. And I've worked at the national level, the state level. I've even worked for the state of Washington, helping write the rules for the hazardous drug law. So, you know, I had a little bit of experience with that. I was asked by many people in the veterinary profession, you know, when are you going to run for office? We need a veterinarian in there. And I kept saying no. No. And then honestly, in 2016, when we had an election that we all know about, and I realized that the federal government was going to be distracted, and it was time to stand up and take care of my community, give back to my community like I have been my profession. And a very good friend of mine, Kathy Haig, who was a representative from LD 35, I think 16 years, I called her. She said, run for the thing that gives you the fire in the belly, because it's not always going to be fun. Sometimes it's going to be painful, but you need to have that fire to keep coming back and keep doing the work. And I realized it was city council. I love Olympia. Some people are born here. I chose here, and I want to work for Olympia. And I served 7 years on Olympia City Council. It gives you quite the education if you've never been in public service. And then I started to realize that some of the most important work we do, it was regional. So us in Olympia working with Lacey and Tumwater and the county and Yelm and Tenino, when we could all be at the table, we leveraged all of our abilities and might, if you will, if that you can use might for money. And we were able to have better capacity to deal with issues. And that's when I started looking up at the hill that's in my own town. And my very, very dear friend, Senator Bateman, served on council with me. And when I found out that her position might be open, we chatted.
That's her position in the state house.
Yes, thank you for clarification. Yes. And I realized that I'm called here. And I ran for this office. And I'll tell you, since I've been here, it's been a blast. But I go back to Kathy Haig's saying, find the thing that gives you the fire in the belly because it keeps you coming back. And I think I have the fire in the belly for being here in the legislature.
Well, I, for one, am glad that you chose to be with us. This is a very good place to be. Now that we have kind of talked a little bit about you, let's talk some more about you. And By that, I mean, what are you doing here now? You're about, I think we're about 60, 62 days into this 105-day session. In a way, a lot of the work is done because the policy bills that came from this House, they've now winnowed out, and either they are dead for the year or they're moving forward. But it's too late to come up with a new idea for a great bill and have it become law this year. So tell me about your experience leading up to yesterday, which was the final day for a House-originated bill to be voted on by the full chamber.
Well, I'll start with orientation. Both the Democratic orientation and the nonpartisan was outstanding. I have never been through such a good orientation. It's still like drinking from a fire hose when you get a position like this, but they made it, instead of two fire hoses, only one, so that we hit the ground understanding, you know, what's going to be the first step, what's the next step. First, you have to have your bill get a hearing, then you have to have an executive session. And then you have to get voted out of exec, and then you got to either go to a financial committee and then to rules, and then you have to beg and plead to pull it out of rules to be considered on the floor. And as we learned last night, you don't always get it heard, even if it comes out of rules. And the longer we take in debate, the more bills are dying. It's quite the process. My goal in this first session is to learn the job and learn the process and start developing ideas that I want to come back with. One of the things I learned at City Council, we did our best policy, hands down, when we brought everybody into the room and we heard from everybody and we built a policy. And yes, I did do bad policy at the city, as I learned that, and I can point to that simple fact. And one of the things as a new representative is you get handed bills. So you kind of either do the stakeholder in on the fly or go, you know what, I'm going to put that off till next year because I think this needs work. And then you get those surprise bills that you think are easy, and guess what, they're not. And there's a more stakeholdering that needs to get done, and then they can end up either not getting a hearing or not getting out of the exec session in your committees.
None of them are easy, it seems like. It's not an original thought on my part to say that the whole purpose of the way things are set up is to make bills die. Mm-hmm. The idea of an easy bill, they're all hard. Some of them are really hard.
Yes. What tickles me is, and I will hopefully always have bills like this, are the pragmatic, the practical, the cleaning up and increasing efficiency, and then sometimes reducing costs. And so I always have a few of those. And those are the ones that I tend to find, yeah, sometimes there's some stakeholdering that needs to be done, but everybody seems to agree, both sides of the aisle. Hey, this is, you know, even in City Council, I love those little things.
Everybody that comes here, it seems like, has some goals in mind, some priorities, at least, even if they don't have a particular concept of, here's going to be this bill that I'm going to work hard on, and it will become a law. I've seen quotes from you in which you talk about basically having four main priorities here as a legislator, and those would be homelessness / affordable housing, the opioid crisis, racism, and climate change.
Yeah.
Capital Ideas wouldn't be complete without talking about lawmakers' bills. In this case, you, I think, are pretty unusual because seven of your bills have made it out of the House and over to the Senate, which is pretty unusual for a first-year lawmaker. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
One of the things that means is you've got a lot of hard work ahead of you now to sell those bills in the Senate. But what's the first one that comes to your mind right now?
I would like to highlight the ferry captains one. The reason I like that one is it kind of mixes both my love of practical and pragmatic with supporting the folks in our state that do the work. We have all these issues. What we need to talk about and begin to talk about is, one, how to fix them, and two, how did we get here? And one of that is having living wages, having skilled labor, bringing the pride back into that, helping people get back on their feet in skilled labor. Ferry Captains addresses a law that nobody understands why it ever happened, which is separating the bargaining units of ferry captains from the master mates and pilots. Master mates and pilots and captains run the ferries. if they're bargaining about different things that are impacting their workplace and they're not in alignment, we may miss something that's critical not only to keep workforce on the ferries, but to actually run them. So bringing them back into the same room together gives leverage, gives them some power over their own workspace and their wages. And ultimately, our ferries, yes, we are failing for multiple reasons, but one of them is workforce. And giving some of that back to them is, I think, critical.
It seems like having those positions doing separate bargaining could inadvertently just set up some almost adversarial situations.
Absolutely.
Not a good idea on a ship.
No. As a medical professional, as a doctor, you run it as a team, and when you have to, you step up and you take over. I suspect that's how those ferries work. The captains are there, and they let the team run, and only when they have to do they step in. But a good leader is important to be at the table as well.
This bill made it through the House, and it is now in probably the Labor and Commerce Committee over in the Senate.
Yep.
What's number two?
Sort of tie. One that didn't make it out of committee, but I am so looking forward to stakeholdering, and I've actually got the group together, and we've agreed to start meeting in May, which is methane monitoring on dairy and livestock farms. The other is the AI bargaining bill. I would start with the AI bargaining because it is going over to the Senate. I understand it will likely get a hearing. AI can do great things, but it can do great harm. We are literally at a moment where we will see changes in our, not only our society, communities, but workforce like we have not seen since the space age. We just will. I believe that the people doing the jobs for the state need to be able to have some say because if we're not careful, it will impact their wages. It will impact how we evaluate them as employees. And that is the two things that we negotiated and then said, this is what we need to bring this bill forward.
This bill involves state and local government employees.
Yes.
Are these employees within a specialty or is this the workforce?
We're looking at the workforce, the classified employee. If we have an AI process brought in to a state agency, a city, a county, if it is going to impact the employees' wages, they have the right to bargain before it's put in place. If it's going to affect how they are evaluated, we want them to be able to say, wait, let's talk about this. It allows the state agency management to continue putting in technology that's not AI, that is not bargainable. It allows the state agencies, if the program upgrades don't impact these things, just to put them in. It's not bargainable unless it affects those two things. This is a way for us to see how we can work with the employees, integrate this into the workspace in a way that protects not only what we do as a state, but our employees. We want the state of Washington to be the best employer we can make it. And if this policy needs some updates, I'm more than willing to do that in the coming years, but we need to start this process because in 2 to 4 years, it is going to be too late.
I want to veer off wildly here now and talk about your methane bill.
Yes.
I'm going to let you fill in the details about the bill, but I will just observe here that it's generated a lot of interesting emotions on people's parts, including a lot of humor.
Yes.
Because methane is essentially flatulence.
Mm-hmm.
Which is always funny to me.
And to a lot of people, let me tell you.
So let's talk about this bill. I will start by saying the bill did not come out of the House this year. But next year is a new year. And I suspect you're going to want to continue working on it. But in the meantime, how does this bill work?
This bill weirdly connects me to my profession, which is a veterinarian, and weirdly to the work I did for Washington State Veterinary Medical Association. When I was president of that association, it was about the time that California was beginning to look at methane on dairy farms. The legislature was about to pass some laws on methane scrubbing, in a dairy operation, and they were going to put it on the barn.
What does methane scrubbing mean?
It removing the methane from the air. Let me sidestep. Okay. Methane is much more short-lived than CO2, which is the main greenhouse gas, but it has more impact, and it is much worse. And if we can reduce our methane levels, we may extend out how long we have until the catastrophic climate change, giving us more time to let science and technology rescue us or help us adapt. In parts of California, it could be up to 50% of their greenhouse gas. Now, check that number, but it's in that realm.
A large number.
It's a large number. So that's why the California State Legislature was looking at this issue. Let's just call it cow farts. And cow burps were the source of the methane because of how they eat and the physiology of a cow. We started to push back as veterinarians, going, wait, there's a lot of other sources that we really need to understand this on the farms before we regulate it. And this is what generated the University of Davis veterinary studies on methane production on farms. And what they found was a little bit surprising. It wasn't the dairy barns being the highest on the farms. It was what they were doing with the manure. And in some farms, depending upon what they were feeding the cows and where it's being stored, because if you put a bunch of grain on the ground, it starts to compost, and composting creates methane. And what they discovered was that the manure and, yes, secondarily, the cows were a problem. And that's when they built their policies. And that's also what drove, believe it or not, a lot of amazing science that helps mitigate or remove methane from the productions. I knew about this. And when they handed me this bill, said it's a simple bill, I knew it wasn't. I knew this was a proverbial can of worms. And so I asked for a hearing just because I wanted to get the process started. I knew this was going to take some work because I already know in the state of Washington, we have some amazing dairy farmers already working on how do we reduce the methane production. I also know as a scientist, if you're going to give credit, say carbon credit to something, whether it's a car or a dairy farm, you have to know your baseline. You have to know where you're starting. You can say, well, this is going to drop at 30%. Well, 30% of what? I am working with the stakeholder group that includes the farm bureaus, the dairy association, some cattle producers. I'm hoping to get a few others. And believe it or not, I'm bringing in the wastewater because methane is generated in our wastewater plants as we basically compost the sewage. And that is similar to some of the mitigation work being done with manure. And if you compost it correctly, what comes out the other end is biogas and biosolids. Biosolids is a fancy way of saying fertilizer.
This conversation wouldn't be complete at this point unless I brought up the fact that you have been invited to be on The Daily Show
yes,
to talk about this particular bill. And I think we all would know exactly what piqued their interest. It was cow farts.
Yep.
As I said, that's funny, and that's a comedy show, in addition to being a pretty good news show. And so that prompted them to get in touch with you. Have you got any more details on that appearance?
Well, we do know they're coming to Olympia to film. We are meeting with them tomorrow afternoon to go over the topics. They want it to be spontaneous, so I won't have specific questions that I will be asked. But I am certainly thinking that it's going to have to do with cow burps and farts. And my assumption, it could even have, how do you measure? Do you have to put a bag over their back end and measure? I would like to tell you that in Argentina, they're actually putting bags over the back end of cows, but they're doing it not to measure, but to sell the biogas. So that, I got that tidbit for them. But no, it's not how you measure it. There's actually World Health Organization. The European Union has done amazing work on figuring out, once again, a math equation. Per cow of a certain weight, you know how much methane they're going to produce both as manure and as farts.
Based on their intake.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa, this has been, so far, a really interesting conversation to me. And I suspect to the listeners, but it's been going on for a long time. I need to do two things. One is invite you to come back to Capital Ideas for Lisa Partially, the sequel. And also, tell me how you want to go out here. What's the last thing that you want to touch on before we wrap up this episode of Capital Ideas?
I would like to wrap up saying to the people in my district and the people of Washington that I am learning as fast as I can how to do this. I'm also very much looking at the long game. Some of our issues are not going to be fixed overnight. We need to be thoughtful, and we need to move forward with that in mind. I promise to use my pragmatic, practical, scientific, and sense of humor to move forward in some of these issues and looking for the solutions with everybody at the table.
It seems like you've been doing a pretty good job of that up to this point, or you wouldn't have seven bills over in the Senate by now. So keep it up. We've been talking with Representative Lisa Partially, District 22, based in Olympia, Washington, which is the beautiful capital of the Evergreen State. Lisa, this has been great. I know more than I did when we sat down, and that to me is the mark of a good podcast.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here, and I'd love to come back.
Thanks. There's one more Capital Ideas here in our 17th year. If you haven't subscribed yet, it's about time. Just visit the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov and click on the media button, or go to your favorite podcast aggregator and look for us. This is your state government, and what happens here matters. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889, the year of the Oklahoma land rush, when the U.S. government gave away 2 million acres of land that already belonged to someone else. Thanks for your time.